Well, our theme for 2025 is live like Jesus. And it comes out of a simple desire to follow Jesus and to learn better what that means. Now, we have been spending the entire year in the Gospel of Matthew. Remember, we started with the Beatitudes, and then we went chapter 5 up through the end of the book at Resurrection Sunday. And then we went back to chapter 5 and started working our way through, and now today we're up to chapter 24. Guess what we're going to do after this? We're going to go back to the beginning and cover chapters 1 through 4 through Advent. Now, Carrie is going to be preaching next Sunday, and she has so graciously offered to cover the first part of Matthew chapter 1, namely the genealogy. And if you think that's not an exciting topic, just wait till you hear what Carrie has to say next Sunday. Well, we have covered just about everything that Matthew tells us about the renewed life and living like Jesus, including defining devotion and the reward for service in the kingdom of God. Those were some of the most recent topics. You may remember that I said the kingdom of God is bigger than any church, denomination, or organization. The rule of God, which is what the kingdom of God means, encompasses the whole world. But only some people recognize it, and only some people are partnering with God to restore it. You may remember this quote, Jesus redefined the way we think about life and about God and shapes the way that his followers live the renewed life. Well, we are now culminating our study on the renewed life. And Jesus' disciples ask him that question that everyone is dying to know. So how does this story end? Right? Consider a jigsaw puzzle. You ever done a jigsaw puzzle? Yep. At first, the pieces, they seem scattered, they seem chaotic and confusing, but, you know, as you start connecting them, you start discovering that a beautiful picture is forming. And now consider, have any of you ever put together a jigsaw puzzle and you didn't have the box? Mm-hmm. You didn't have the picture to look at. Remember I said last week that we all have a narrative, we all have this idea of how we think the picture is supposed to look? Well, the way the story of life unfolds, the way this puzzle comes together, we don't have the big picture, but he does. And Matthew 24 tells us that God adds pieces that we never expected. And he creates a masterpiece that is far beyond our imagination. So take a lesson from that. Embrace the surprises in life because they may just be part of God's divine plan unfolding. So how will it be at the end of the age? How will the story end? Well, we know that God's plan is to restore all things. I've said that over and over again as we've gone through Matthew. Now, the disciples probably imagined that Jesus was going to lead a revolution and that they were going to be his generals. Well, they got it partly right. The truth is that Jesus does lead a revolution, but it's a moral revolution, not a military revolution. In the renewed life, living like Jesus, it's a life that's characterized by love for God and love for others. We said that last week. It's a life whose values are just the opposite of what the world is searching for. And you can expect that in the culmination of this story, it is going to be full of surprises as well. There's going to be an unexpected ending, not the ending that most people think. And there are going to be some major plot twists, but I can tell you these plot twists have been foreshadowed all along. And those who are familiar with the story are going to recognize them when they see them. But there is this element of surprise. And the element of surprise is used to gain an advantage in the end for those who have been part of the story all along. And by the way, if you're following along in your outline in the bulletin or online, those are our points for this morning. This chapter should not be troubling for those who have chosen to live like Jesus. It should make you lean in and tune in to what happens next. So let's begin with the unexpected ending. We are in Matthew chapter 24, and we're just going to read a few verses to begin. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came out to point out to him the buildings of the temple. And he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." Now, most of us have heard this passage before, and you may not be particularly shocked by it if you've heard it before. What does Jesus say about the destruction of the temple? Not one stone will be left upon another. That is astounding. That is shocking. So much so that it has caused scholars to insist that Matthew must have written this gospel, or at least this portion of it, after the events of 70 AD, when the Romans actually did destroy the Jewish temple complex. But scholars who have no trouble believing that Jesus foretold these events prophetically counter that the most natural reading is that Jesus, in fact, foretold these events prophetically. So, try to stop and imagine for a moment that you don't know that the temple is going to be destroyed. For example, how would you have felt if someone had told you before September 11th, 2001, that the World Trade Center was going to be destroyed? How would that have impacted you? What if somebody had told you before November 9th, 1989, that the Berlin Wall is going to come down? Would that have shocked you? Maybe some of you are old enough to remember November 22nd, 1963. What if somebody told you then that the President of the United States was going to be assassinated? Would you have believed them? Now you understand the magnitude of what Jesus is saying. This is mind-blowing stuff. Last week we talked about narratives, that we all have this idea of how we think the story is supposed to go. But I can tell you, this doesn't fit in anyone's narrative. Nobody even wants to think about it. And when Jesus says this temple is going to be destroyed, it probably evokes the kind of feelings in people that you probably felt when those events happened. This feels like the end of the world. However, according to Jesus, it's not. At least, not yet. And here's your first fill in the blank. The end is not yet, Jesus says. Let's pick up in verse 3. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered them, "See that no one leads you astray. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead many astray. And you'll hear of wars and of rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place. But the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places, And all of these things are just the beginning of birth pains. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death. And you'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Now, there is a political strategy, and if I really wanted to get into it, I could cite certain authors and so forth. There's a political strategy, and if you're paying attention, you've probably recognized it, whereby a leader or leaders will intentionally create chaos, to manipulate people into submission. You see, it works like this. First, you create a crisis, and then you present yourself as the solution, right? And if you do it right, nobody realizes that you're the one who created the crisis in the first place. You frame someone else as the cause of the crisis, and then you claim to be the hero who can fix it. I'll let you come up with some recent examples of this on your own. I'm sure the men who are counting the offering will cite a few. Jesus told us this was going to happen. He said there would be chaos. He said there was going to be international conflict and tension. He said that there was going to be social polarization. He even predicted that it would divide believers and non-believers. And he told his disciples, he said, "You are going to become the object of the world's scorn." He promised that there would be suffering. The Bible calls it tribulation. Jesus promised that. Let me take you to John 15, verses 18 and 19. He told his disciples, "If the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. And if you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." So Jesus told us ahead of time so that we wouldn't get caught up in the chaos. Now, we already know that much of this world is under the control of our spiritual enemy. So we shouldn't be surprised when they turn on us. You know, the whole idea is to create confusion so that we give up and we give in. Here's what you can learn from this chapter. Sometimes it is going to feel like it's the end of the world. But Jesus says, it's not yet. This is not the end, not yet. Jesus said it would be so. But this is just the beginning of the end. Some people are going to give up. Their love will grow cold, Jesus said. Some people are going to be fooled by the misdirection and follow the wrong voices. But the one who hangs in there will make it through. Jesus also promised that. So what should we do? Here's your next fill in the blank. Pray to be prepared. Pray to be prepared. Picking up in verse 15. "So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in the house. Let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas for women who are pregnant and those who are nursing infants in those days. Pray that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath, for there will be great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. So we begin this passage with the reference to the abomination of desolation, which is spoken of by Daniel. Let me take you to Daniel 9:27. It's the first mention of this. Daniel says, "The ruler will make a treaty with the people for a period of one set of seven, and after half this time he will put an end to the sacrifices and offerings, and as a climax to all his terrible deeds, he'll set up a sacrilegious object that causes desecration until the fate decreed for this defiler is finally poured out on him." So, on one sense, this has actually already happened before Jesus is speaking, because in 167 BC, Antiochus Epiphanes IV, and if Jill were here, she would probably boo, because you're supposed to boo whenever you hear Antiochus mentioned. He set up an idol of Zeus in the sanctuary of the temple and sacrificed a pig on the altar. But the way Jesus is speaking, it sounds like he's saying this is going to happen again. And you know, Rome did invade in 70 AD, but it was not the same kind of ceremonial defilement as before. They just burned the whole thing to the ground. And the Jews, they were systematically killed. They surrounded the city and systematically killed the Jews, except for those who fled immediately. This fulfilled Jesus' prediction. And you know, there were thousands of Jews who remembered Jesus' words, who fled immediately and put their faith in him, though most did not. You know, I know many contemporary Bible teachers have taught that Jesus is talking about a time of tribulation that is yet to come. And you know, it's not unreasonable to think that if it happened once and it happened twice, it could happen a third time. We know that history repeats itself, so it's not inconceivable that these words could have yet another fulfillment. So what should we do if there's another time of tribulation in our day? If you see that those who are considered powerful according to this world desecrate and attempt to destroy the presence of God on this earth, that's what I believe the abomination which causes desolation really means and what it represents. First of all, don't wait around to see what happens next, okay? Get to a place of safety, if there is such a place. Second, just know this, that it's part of God's plan. That God is letting them do it, and that he's going to have the last word. You know, Paul makes some predictions of his own. He goes into some detail about the things that Jesus was saying. In 2 Thessalonians 2:3 to 5, he says, "Let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God." Sound familiar? "Proclaiming himself to be God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you about these things?" Now, I covered this in a previous sermon. You can go back on YouTube and look for that one. But here's the point. God is going to let evil do what evil wants to do for a time so that evil will be seen for what it is. That's the plan. Remember, evil creates chaos and then pretends to be the hero. Because if people saw the true nature of evil, they would never follow it, right? So God sets a trap. He lets evil think they've won. He waits until they let down their guard, until they remove the mask, and then he lets the whole world see it. He lets the whole world see exactly what it is they've been following, so that hopefully they never do it again. And do you know that this same plot has played out multiple times throughout history? And do you think that God might do it again? The lesson for the followers of Jesus is to pray so that we may not be deceived. Now, this is not just praying to shape the course of events, but it's praying so that the course of events shapes us and the world that we live in. We want to pray in agreement with God that even though evil may appear to win, it's just going to drive people into the loving arms of Jesus, the real Jesus, the one they were not expecting. Let's move on to the second part of this message, the foreshadowed plot twist. So let's pick up in verse 23 of Matthew 24. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I've told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he's in the wilderness, do not go out. And if they say, look, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. So, how are we going to know the real Jesus? You know, Jesus told us these things beforehand precisely so that we wouldn't be fooled. And the idea is that we need to tune in to him. Now, let me talk to the younger ones in the room. That word tune in, what does that mean to you? You know, we used to have these old TV sets, and they like had these antennas on top, you know, and the signal was often weak and fuzzy, and it sometimes made it hard. Sometimes the screen looked just like that, you know. And dedicated viewers, they would adjust their antennas or position themselves. Sometimes the person who was adjusting the antennas, as long as they were touching it, the picture would be there. So everybody would be like, just stay there. Just stay there. Right? Remember that? But the idea is that we had to learn to tune in to be able to see the picture clearly. And you know, we still need to learn to tune in. Tuning out the distractions, focusing on God's word, recognizing him amidst the chaos and the confusion. Jesus says, don't be fooled. It's not some clever secret. It's not some esoteric knowledge that somebody's going to be able to sell you. In fact, he gives a couple of examples. He says, it's like lightning. Lightning, you can't not see it. It lights up the entire sky. And I can tell you, when Jesus comes, you will know it. You will know it. And then he gives another parable. He says, you know, when you see the vultures circling in the sky, you know to avoid that area, especially if you're a good Jew that's not allowed to come in contact with anything dead, right? When you see the vulture circling, you know to avoid that because something dead is there. And so there will be signs. Some will draw you to them, and others will tell you what to avoid. And you may not know exactly when it is going to happen, but I can tell you, there will be signs, deadly signs. So what are you saying, Jesus? Well, here's your next fill in the blank. He's saying it gets worse before it gets better. It gets worse before it gets better. Let me pick up in verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call and will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heaven to the others. You know, Bible commentators will point out that whenever ancient texts talk about the sun, the moon, and the stars, it's usually a metaphor for world rulers and the spiritual powers that are behind them. You know, will the stars literally fall from the sky? I don't know, perhaps. But I think it's also likely that the Bible is saying that there are going to be powerful people in high places of leadership that are going to fall. And that's going to be a sign. There's going to be dark days where it seems like we have no light to follow. Everything that we think is stable in this world is going to be shaken. However, when everything else seems like it's falling apart, that's when you look up. You got that? When everything seems like it's falling apart, that's when you look up, because that's when you are going to see Jesus coming on the clouds. And the people who have thrown in their lot with the evil forces, well, they're going to mourn. They're going to know it's over. And those who have held on to their faith in Christ are going to recognize what is happening and respond accordingly. Now, is this the rapture? I don't know. Maybe. Ask me about these things. I'll first of all tell you there's a lot that I don't know. What is clear is that those who are following Jesus are going to be drawn to him. And I want to be following Jesus right up until the end. Here's your next fill in the blank. Look for the culmination of these events. Look for the culmination of these events. Everything is coming together. Everything leads to something. Let me pick up in verse 32. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as the branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things, you know that he is near. At the very gates. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So who are the people who are going to be standing with Jesus when he returns? They're going to be the people who stood with him when everyone else was against him. They're going to be the ones who held on to their faith, even when things really got bad. So how do you hold on to faith like that? Well, you have to recognize that what you see in the moment is just part of a bigger process. What's the illustration Jesus gives? When you see the leaves budding in the springtime, you know it's a sign of what comes next, right? The leaves. Whenever you see this, you think, what comes next? Okay? So when you see the chaos, think, what comes next? Right? When you see somebody pretending to be the hero, what comes next? You got that? Right? When it looks like evil is winning, what comes next? And when everything looks dark and hopeless, remember, what comes next? What comes next is the element of surprise for those who don't know what comes next. And that's the third part of our message, the element of surprise. Do you like surprises? Some people are yes, some people are no. I mean, there are some surprises that are nice, right? Like a surprise party. Surprise! Oh, you shouldn't have, you know. And then there are some surprises that are not nice, like that bill that comes in the mail, right? And then there are surprises that are kind of like nice and not nice at the same time, like a practical joke, you know. I can tell you that the end of the age will be no joke. I think how we feel about the surprise is going to depend on what we were expecting. So here's your next fill in the blank. Expect the unexpected. Expect the unexpected. Verse 36. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, there was eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken, one will be left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Remember what I said about repetition? Emphasis. The point of this passage is that you do not know when Jesus is coming, but to expect it. You don't know. No one knows. So the first thing to expect is that you don't know when it's going to happen. You know, most recently there was a pastor from South Africa who had a vision of Jesus returning during the Jewish Feast of Trumpets. You know, if you follow the internet, you might have seen this. His vision spread virally over the internet so that many people believed that Jesus was coming back on September 23rd or 24th of this year. Well, that didn't happen. And for everyone that was saying that Jesus was coming back on that date, there was somebody else on the internet saying that it can't be that date because the Bible specifically says that we don't know the day or the time of his coming. I would just say this, get used to not knowing and be comfortable with it. Because even Noah, as far as I can tell, didn't know when the flood was going to happen. But that didn't stop Noah from getting up every morning and preparing the ark. The rain came when the ark was ready. And following Jesus means preparing every day for his return. Every day you get up and you do what you know you need to do because he's coming. Not because we know when he's returning, but precisely because we don't know. And only God knows. If we're attuned to him, we will also be ready. But we need to learn to live in that state of readiness. And doing so will mean that we are both surprised and not surprised when he comes. You see, the element of surprise is necessary for exposing evil. But for those who are following Jesus, well, it should at least be a pleasant surprise. So how are we to prepare if we are also sure to be surprised? Well, here's another fill in the blank. Don't stop being diligent. Don't stop being diligent. Keep doing what you know you need to do. Picking up in verse 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and he begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Do you know who is prepared for surprises? The one giving the surprise. No, I'm talking about another group of people. People who intentionally prepare for surprises. First responders, firemen, police, military. You realize all of these people, they train for the unexpected. That's what they do, right? Because when something catches you by surprise, a fire, an accident, or an attack, you know what happens? Your adrenaline surges, right? And you go into this fight or flight mode. And I can tell you that your brain actually functions at a lower level at those times so that your body has more energy for whatever comes next. You know what that means? That means we usually don't make good decisions when we're surprised. But that's where training comes in. First responders are trained for what to do in case of the unexpected. Actually, this kind of relates to your self-defense class too, doesn't it, Alan? You know, you train for the surprise. Because when you train for the surprise, you don't have to think so hard about what to do because you are both mentally and physically prepared. You know, when you're doing your training, you consider as many possible scenarios as a person can possibly imagine. And they've disciplined their minds and their bodies to take the appropriate actions if any of those things should occur. And the most common scenarios you rehearse over and over and over again so that your thoughts and your actions become almost automatic. Now, apply that to the Lord's return. The one thing that we can be sure of is that we don't know when Jesus is coming. But we should live disciplined lives so that whenever it does happen, we're prepared. We watch the sign of the times, not to try to figure out when it's going to happen, but to prepare us for the very things that Jesus warned us about. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be confusing, even chaotic at times. But that is exactly what we have trained for. And we know who we are and what we have to do. And we can do it even if we're not feeling it. When we live like Jesus, and Jesus comes back, I can tell you we are going to know it because we have trained for it. We know the real Jesus because we have practiced looking like him. And we will be immediately drawn to him because we belong to him. And one last thing, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the end of the age, because for those who live like Jesus, this is precisely the moment we have been preparing for. And I can tell you, it's not really the end. It's just the beginning of a new chapter with God, who is restoring all things. Pat, would you come? So here's some questions for reflection this week. When you think about the end times, how does that make you feel? I mean, when you looked in the bulletin and you saw the message title, are you afraid? Are you anxious? Are you intrigued, perhaps even excited? Are you ready to meet Jesus? I mean, in person this time. Will it be a pleasant surprise? Question number two. Since we don't know when this will happen, how are you preparing? And I'm not talking about your bomb shelter and your emergency rations. I'm talking about your spiritual disciplines. Are you preparing to meet him? Question number three. Are you watching for the sign of the times? Does it discourage you when you see chaos in the world, or does it fill you with anticipation of Christ's return? Think, what happens next? And when you see these things all aligning, what is your response? Let's stand. Let's worship the Lord as we consider these things.